called everyone this evening. Are you sure? What are we going to talk about this evening?
Mother, how does one test what seems to be an infection as to whether it stems from the ego or from God?
You keep on testing it, Ram. Many times when you are striving desperately to get God's direction, something comes forth very, very strongly because of your sincerity. And it seems as though this is absolutely the true way that you should follow the truth of something. But always remember to test it. Remember that Christ said, test each spirit as it comes, for not every spirit is of God. That seems rather a strange statement to make when we say that God is all there is. But there is this delusive force which has no basis in truth. And it comes to tempt you. So you test it. You test it in many ways. One way is to ask God again, God, if this vision be not true, reveal the truth to me. I remember the story that I think I've told it to you before about Padre Pio, the Catholic mystic in Italy. I think he's passed on now. But the story demonstrates so clearly the answer to your question. He was a tremendous man. He was a stigmatist, and he was known to have the power of bilocation. He appeared in more than one place at one time. He was given credit for great healing power, and many times when people were in trouble and prayed to God in this man's soul, this fragrance of flowers would always surround them, and they would know that his spirit was present because of this. And this man was very simple. He lived in just a simple cell and required very little, and he served God constantly. So he was in the cell one evening, and each week, regardless of his saintliness, he felt that it was necessary for him to confess his sins to his father confessor. So he had made arrangements for the father confessor to come to this little cubicle in which he lived. And so he came. And during the conversation, the father confessed his sins. His father confessor said a strange thing to him. He said, "Well, my son," he said, "you have served God well and faithfully for many, many years. And now it is God's will that you leave all of this and go out into the world." And Padre Pio was so shocked that he couldn't believe his ears. And immediately the idea came to him that he must test this spirit to see if it really was telling him the truth. And he said, "Jesus Christ!" And as of that moment, that apparition faded away as though it hadn't been sitting before him, and there was nothing left in the room but a smell of sulfur. So, to say the name of the Christ is one way. God, Christ, Guru. But make sure and test it over and over again if it is an important decision which you must make until you get the right answer. I remember years ago when I was in New York, I was going through a very vital experience at that time spiritually. And I had a problem which had to be solved, and I didn't know which way to go with it. All of a sudden, as I sat in meditation, the whole thing was laid out beautifully. So there didn't seem to be a loophole anywhere in the thing that I was supposed to do. But I had this inner direction to test this spirit, and I did it just in the way that I'm telling you. And I kept testing it, and all of a sudden that disappeared. And I was shown that had I pursued that path as it was first given to me, it would have been the worst trap I could have walked into. And then God laid the whole thing out to me as to how I was supposed to go. and it worked out beautifully. There are many influences around us in many ways that we're not always consciously aware of, because we have been so engrossed in the things of the world and the things of the senses that we have not tuned our consciousness to this higher perceptive force that is within us. And we work almost purely in duality and in the things that our sense impressions give to us. And we don't learn that we must conquer ourselves, we must conquer our own mind, our own conditions first, and become master of that mind if we are to actually make any progress. We must do this. You mind turning off that light for me, please? And also this lamp over here. Thank you.
I have a question.
Sorry?
Will you explain the idea of a soulmate?
Soulmates.
Mm-hmm.
I get that question so many times. Your soulmate is God Himself, who dwells within you. He is your true soulmate. You know, I receive many letters from people from all over the world, and many times they contain just this question. Is there such a thing as having a soulmate, one individual that you are meant for? I think this is covered pretty well in the Christian scriptures when the woman asked the Christ, for instance, if she had been married to a man and that man died, and then she was left a widow, and she married his brother, and that man died, and she married another brother, and so on. Which one, when she went to heaven, would be her husband? And he told her that none of the brothers would be her husband, actually. That it was God Himself who was the bridegroom. And that is the truth. Now, you have different mates in different incarnations for a given purpose, for the purpose of development. Now, it is said in some circles that there is one particular one that you are supposed to have, but you go through incarnations without finding that one. And the reason for that is that if you had everything lovely to start with and just as you wanted it to be, you would not make the necessary effort, because you'd be living in a beautiful dream wearing rose-colored glasses all the time, and your opportunity for growth would not be what it should be in order to make the final consummation with God. Now, there are many times when people are ready for the final experience, where they are given an individual soul with whom they are going to go to God. In other words, they are two halves of a whole, the male and the female forces. And it is very necessary that that be so, because each one has something to give to the other and to learn from the other in order that both of them might attain the complete balance within themselves, so that they may not be dependent on one another in the final analysis. Now, you take the one who has become total master of himself, who has paid the total price for God realization. That one has attained the supreme marriage within his own being of the male and the female forces within himself, you see. And he stands alone with God. And to him, marriage is not necessary. If you've read the autobiography of a yogi, you know that that was my own guru's path. He did not find it necessary to marry. Neither did he want to. But this is true with very few people. Because everybody, if they be normal at all, reaches out for a mate. Someone that they can relate to. Someone that they can live together with and enjoy each other. But the underlying principle of all this is for your development and for your growth in God. Because God stands in every form that is before you. And when your husband and wife, as I've many times remarked, seems to be giving you a bad time, look at that one and see God in that one and realize that whatever is being said is necessary for your own soul growth and development. I haven't answered the question the way you want me to, have I?
Kind.
You want to know why? It is because you're looking for it in the human sense. And I'm giving it to you in the divine. Because the ego sense always wants to fulfill its dream in the human aspect, you see. It doesn't want to give up the things that it has always dreamed about, that it's been taught is a part of normal life and of living. And it is a part of normal life and living. After all, we are told that God is both Father and Mother, are we not? And from the union of these two, God as Spirit and the Mother as Nature, came forth the child. So that every child is the product of the union between Spirit and Nature, because we are born in a body of flesh, yet it is that indwelling Spirit that is the eternal life and consciousness and power that is within us. I had a letter recently from a woman who has had some bad love experiences. She's married to a man who is a great deal older than herself, and she made the statement that she doubted whether or not she would ever find anybody in this life, or whether it was possible to do so, because she had looked around, and no matter where she looked, marriages weren't all that they were supposed to be, according to the dream, you see. And she didn't realize that what she was truly seeking, what everyone is unconsciously seeking, in their reaching out for love, is this union with God who dwells within, because He is the eternal beloved. You can depend on God who is within you and everywhere equally present. When you cannot depend on one single human being on earth, and many times through the disappointments and frustrations which come to us in the sense of human love, when we finally overcome them, outgrow them, outstrip them, so to speak, we find tremendous power as a result of that overcoming. Self-mastery. We have learned some lessons that will stand us in very good stead in the next situation that confronts us. And many times there are many of those in a lifetime, sometimes only one. But each one is for the purpose of growth. And you will find that you learn something definitely in the spirit each time. You will learn self-mastery. You will learn not to be jealous. You will learn not to be over-possessive. You will learn not to be so demanding. You will learn understanding. And you must learn these things in the course of marriage. Because in the first place, no man is an island. We are all, whether we like it or not, interdependent one upon the other for something or other. And so we so many times try to mold other people's ideas, other people's lives, to our own image. And we cannot do that. We must give them the privilege of being themselves, of loving them anyway. The Newsboy's definition of a friend is a fellow who knows all about you and who loves you anyway. That is also the position of the guru, that one who knows all about you but loves you anyway. Because infinite patience must be realized. Sometimes a husband or a wife grows faster than the other. And the other one must have that understanding. You must be able to not hold yourself back spiritually, but to understand that the other individual is not able to comprehend the state of consciousness which you now enjoy. And so, therefore, they are going as rapidly as they can, and they cannot be blamed. But there are many husbands and wives who try to stop their mates from pursuing their particular path of God, that path to which they have been directed. And this is very wrong of them to do this, because each one has the inalienable right to follow God in whatever way God within him directs him. What we teach here is not a religion as such, and yet it is the religion of every man. It is a science of being. It is a science which will take you to the knowledge of your real self, or God who is within you. And when you have this knowledge of truth within yourself, you can go to any church, you can go to any religion, and you will find God there. Because you have the basis for all religions. It is a question of self-development. Step by step. It is a tremendous project which you undertake. It is fascinating. It is interesting. It is ever-changing, because in pursuing this quest of your real self, you pursue everything that's in the universe, so to speak, because God is everywhere equally present. But until you learn to go within yourself and to control your own mind and therefore your own actions, your life is that of slavery. It is not a life of conquest. It is not a life of self-mastery in any sense of the word. You must learn to become master of yourself. So this is what yoga does for you. The word yoga means yoke or union. Now Christ was one of the greatest yogis who ever lived. So was the Buddha. So was Krishna. So was Muhammad, Zoroaster. All of these great ones. Why? Because what they were after was the ultimate realization of their true self. That's what yoga means. It is much misunderstood, not so much as it used to be, but still it is misunderstood by many in the Western world. And they seem to associate the idea of yoga with snake charmers and people who can make a rope go up in the air and all that sort of thing, all these weird experiences. But that is not true yoga. That is a fake, just as there are fakes in many religions. What you are after is the truth, the knowledge of who and what you are. What is your purpose? What is your destiny in life? How can you gain the highest goal for which God brought you to this earth? To admit defeat in anything admits that you do not have understanding of the laws of God. You should never give up unless everything in you said, all right, this is it for the moment. Now you have learned all you're supposed to here. This has happened to me when I've been trying to do things. I've had a tremendous inspiration, a tremendous urge to write something, for instance. Revelations were given to me and I was writing them out. Then all of a sudden, I thought I was going to write enough to be put in a book. I was stopped completely. And everything in me told me that I wasn't to go on doing this anymore. That this was it. Now, why I was made to do it up to that reason, I couldn't see at the time, but I've seen it since that I needed to express what was given to me, to get it out, to put it down in writing, because when you put what you get from God down in writing, it secures it. The human mind is made in a way that regardless of how much you try to hang on to the details of the revelations which are given to you, your memory will forget some of them. And I thank God every day of my life that much of what I have given, that God has given me, has been put down in tape, because every now and then I will listen to a tape that I gave years ago when I was going through many vital experiences. Or I will read a transcription of a tape and I will look at something that I said and I will think, well, isn't that marvelous? I didn't remember that I got that. It had slipped my mind totally. And so this replenished my memory, so to speak. It brought it back into consciousness. And so it is good to write things down. I have people who write to me every day of their lives. And the reason they do this is because they feel that because God in this form is their guru, that they must give of the very highest within themselves, that they must get them their consciousness into a higher state before they can sit down and write to me. And I have the letters of some of these people from the beginning, and I see the tremendous effort that they made to get out of this worldly consciousness in the beginning. And I see the progress that has been made step by step until now some of them, every thought, every word, every action is of God. And all they do is to listen for God's direction every minute. They dedicate themselves to God the first thing in the morning and the last thing at night. They surrender themselves to God because they know that they of themselves are nothing. And when they can get this flow of consciousness within themselves tuned in harmony to the cosmic consciousness of God, that their lives are going to be much happier, much more fulfilled, much more successful in every way than if they forget to do these things and they try to do everything on their own in the human sense. Because you see, although we are given judgment, discrimination, reason, the faculty of thinking things out for ourselves, to do this in the human sense is to wonder whether or not what you are doing is right. And it doesn't always come out right. We know that. But when you are going with God every moment, when you are willing to totally surrender your will to His will, and to accept everything which He says to you and follow that direction, having first tested each spirit as it comes. Then when you are able to do that, you will find a whole new beautiful world opening up to you. I keep stressing this all the time because it is the truth. I have letters to prove this. I have people who come to me and tell me that they have put this into practice. Because every time, you see, you write the Guru, or you are in contact with the Guru, your consciousness is uplifted into the consciousness of God, because God in that one is the representative. It is the link between you and the infinite. And your mind dwells on God as you think of that one. Not that that one wants to be thought of as God himself, although they too have God in them, but merely as the inspiration to take you to the goal, which is to be found only within the consciousness of your own being. I draw you all, as I've said many times, to God within myself, only that I may help you to find God, who is the eternal dweller in your own consciousness, within your own heart. I do it not for me, but for you, for you. And there are some devotees who have this extreme devotion, which I myself have for my Guru. It is what inspired me, the great love for God that he had, his example of constantly serving him day and night. I have known him to go without sleep for days. This is true, and he had the power to do this. I myself have done with very, very little sleep for long periods of time, because it is said that 1 hour of real meditation upon God is worth 8 hours of sleep any day, and anyone who sleeps more than 5 hours a day is drugged with sleep. You don't need it, except in very rare circumstances. You need to be meditating upon God. You need to be about your Father's business. Now, because people have so many different facets in their natures, many forms of yoga have been developed. But out of all of those that we have had come to our attention, there are four main paths. One is the royal path, as it is called. That is called Raja Yoga. And that is the path of concentration and of meditation, of self-discipline. And then you have the path of Jnana Yoga, which is the path of wisdom. And that comes through discrimination and the reading of philosophy, the practicing of these things in the higher mental sense. And then you have the bhakti path, which is the path of love and devotion. And then there is the path of karma. Now this is the path of cause and effect, as Jesus said, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. But also, in this highest spiritual sense, it means the path of service to God. In everything that you do, in all the work that you do, if you will learn to serve God above everything and everyone else, this is total dedication, this is total love, this is total surrender to Him. And don't forget that if you are really sincere about bettering yourself, about putting your feet on the spiritual path and keeping them there, that you must have total dedication. You cannot be milk warm. You can't go before the guru, the spiritual teacher, one day because it suits your convenience, and the next day miss it. I plan on giving the sacred Kriya initiation, which I was authorized by my guru to give, and I was one of the few who had his specific authorization to give this. I plan to give it the 9th of June. But I do not plan to give it to the people who do not come regularly, who do not make the effort all the way. Now many say, well, why haven't you given it in all this time? I haven't given it for 6 years. But the reason I haven't given it is because everybody fluctuates back and forth. Sometimes they come and sometimes they don't. We have had a tremendous number of people come through wherever we were the last few years. They come for a few times. Some of them stay for more than that. Some of them stay for a year, and then all of a sudden they disappear. Or they go shopping because they think that somebody else is going to give them God realization without their making any effort. And you will never get your God realization that way. This is a supreme initiation, and you have to earn the right for it. Now, there are many who take the vows that are required of them when this initiation is given, and that is to do it absolutely religiously, morning and night, every day of your lives. And they think that the minute they get the realization that they're, or the initiation, I should say, that they're going to get God realization. This is not the miracle. It is the key to the miracle. But you have to take the key. You have to put it in the keyhole and unlock the door yourself. And it is through your efforts and what use you make of it as to whether or not it will benefit you. And then there are many who do it a few times, and because they don't feel anything special in those few times, think it isn't any good, and they give it up. And they break the vows which they make. Now, at one time, it was required that people sign these vows in writing. I don't believe in that. Because if a person is going to break a vow that they make before God, they're going to do it whether it's in writing or not. But this is something which must, the privilege of forgetting, which must be earned. That's why I haven't given it. And I want to know that those who are going to take it really mean what they say, that it's just not lip service, and that they're willing to give in to every little ailment, every feeling of tiredness, everything that will take them away or will show me that they are not with God all the way. Because, you know, if you really want something, you can make yourself do it. I know it because I have done it. I have made myself come before you when my body was so weak, my body was so filled with pain that I could scarcely stand it. And yet, in coming and forcing myself to obey the will of God within me, when I get started, then the power and the strength of God comes so greatly that it just booms out all over the place. I forget I have a body. I forget I have pain. I forget I have weakness. And I'm only conscious of God who is speaking through me, of this tremendous power, this tremendous force that is going through forth from this form to teach all of his children who come before him in this form. It can be done, and it must be done. Otherwise, you are following your own human will, your own human ego, and you must meet the tests. Now, this particular initiation gives you the technique, the method by which you can revolve the life current around the spine and through the brain. And as this is accomplished, there is a tremendous sensation in the spine. The consciousness is uplifted, and it is said that when you are able to do this exercise, this technique properly, just one time, that you have the same evolution physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, that it would take you the time to get in 1 year of ordinary living. Now, that's tremendous. It's an airplane route. Otherwise, you go on the slow boat to China. You go through all the ups and downs and between these two forces of duality. And you're subject to that. It's like, as I've described many times before, the difference between a man who goes out in the middle of the ocean trying to find his destination in a wash tub. He doesn't have a rudder. He doesn't have a steering wheel. He doesn't have a map. He doesn't have oars. He doesn't have anything. He's subject to the elements. And that's the way the average ordinary individual is, and his way to the infinite. But this strong way, this path of Kriya Yoga, and the word Kriya means to act, is to get in a strong, well-built boat, to have your rudder, to have your map, to have your compass, to have your direction, to know where you're going, to see that your ship is in good shape, and you will reach your destination, and you will reach it much more rapidly than you would before. You see, there is always a summit, a meeting, I should say, called at the summit. But some go by the airplane route. Others go by car. Some go by horse. And some go on foot. And you have only to think about it to know which one gets there last. And so all of this happens in accordance with the effort that you put into it. I can't give it to you. I can give you the method for doing it. There is a very definite, There are rules and regulations with regard to guru-disciple relationship. It is the responsibility of the guru to teach the truth, to be the example of that truth, to be the inspiration of that truth, to have infinite patience to guide and direct the disciple. But the disciple has an equal responsibility of taking what the guru teaches and applying it to their own lives. And you don't get any place with it unless you will apply it every moment of your lives. Don't forget that were it not for the grace of God, you would not be here. That it is He alone who sustains you, who gives you the power to think and breathe and move and have your being every moment of your life. That without Him you could not have any of your possessions. You would not have this human life. You would not have your husband, your wife, your children, your job, or anything if it were not for the grace of God. Because can any one of us do anything by ourselves without that tremendous motivating power behind us? Indeed, we cannot. We may think that we can, but we have to draw from His consciousness to get the very thoughts we think that enable us to put these thoughts into action, to help us to build the various things that we want to do in our lives. We're so wish-washy about things that it is absolutely unbelievable. We're always willing to blame the other fellow for what we don't do and not to give him quarter. We fail to realize that the answer to everything, whether it be all of the success or all of the problems, lies only within ourselves. And that when we change ourselves, we not only change our lives, but we will change the lives of thousands. I'm reminded of a story that was told once about a man who went before a judge. The judge was a Mohammedan. He was a very straight-laced individual. He abided by the rules thoroughly. And so this man came before him with some charge. And he was going to tell the truth, and then he decided he wouldn't. And he said, "Honored sir," he said, "I am sorry to have to report to you that both of our bulls were in a fight." And he said, "The horns of my bull gored into your bull, and your bull, Your bull," he said, "his horns gored my bull, and my bull is now lying in the street dying." And so the man said, "Well, bulls will be bulls. Charge it dismissed." And the man who came before him said, "Oh, sir, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. He said it was my bull who gored your bull, and it is your bull who is lying in the street dying." And the judge became furious, and he fined him $50. So you see, it makes a difference as to which foot the shoe is on, doesn't it? And we are so prone to do this, to blame everybody else, and to gloss over our own actions or lack of them, whatever the case may be. You are responsible to God for every thought, word, and action that goes forth from you. And He knows every single thought, word, and action that goes forth from you because He is the dweller in your temple. Wherever you go, you take Him with you. So you must assume that responsibility. And as long as you permit yourself to be floating back and forth between this and that in the worldly sense, to be guided and led and directed by your senses, just so long you will keep yourself in a state of dis-ease and of misery. You will have problems from now until then. It is only when you are able to rise above that and go into the consciousness of your oneness with God that your whole world changes, never to be the same again. You must do this. You must do it. It was the sole purpose for which you were put on earth. Not for your own pleasure. Not for your own ability to go out and have fun. But to go to God. To find Him who is within yourself. And that is joy. And it is fun if you make it so. You don't have to be long-faced. You don't have to be over-pious and sanctimonious. All you have to do is to feel that joy of God within yourself, to feel His bliss and His presence, and to feel that inner direction. And that voice is in there directing you every moment if you will learn to tune into it and to draw on it. Now, in the beginning, you may have many strange experiences, because don't forget that there are many earthbound souls that will take advantage of an individual who is lukewarm. We see this in the spiritualistic type of individuals who lay themselves open for these earthbound souls to work through. And gradually, over the period of time when this happens, that individual is taken over entirely, and that earthbound soul does things through them so that they do not have a mind, a soul, a body of their own, but that other soul is using it. These are called unconscious spirits that have gone forth, and what comes forth from them is not the truth. And yet people put so much credence in this so many times. These are not the things to do. You will have many occult powers come to you, but that is not what you are after. You are after the realization of your oneness with God. You are after the knowledge and the experience of seeing that great light, which is the light of your own soul. It is right here in the center of your forehead. That is why Jesus made the statement, "The light of the body is the eye, singular. Therefore, let thine eye be single, and thy whole body shall be filled with light." But how many people, every day of their life, lift their consciousness up there to shut off this material vision and say, "Lord, here am I, take me," and go deep within the sanctuary of their own soul and commune with Him and ask for His guidance and His direction? How many say, "Lord, let only Thy will be done"? Instead, we say, "Lord, give me this. Lord, do this for me. Lord, I have to have this." That reminds me of another little story about a man who was out on a journey, and he was very, very tired from walking. He was a very spiritual man, and he had great faith in God. So he lifted his eyes to the heavens, and he said, "Oh, Lord, give me a horse." Well, just a little ways away, a mare had given birth to a foal, a little mare or whatever, and there were two men there, and they were really in need of somebody to carry this foal. And so just as this man came along, they made use of him, and he found this small baby horse in his arms. And he said, "Lord, you answered my prayer, but you didn't mean get what I meant." He said, "I wanted a horse that I could ride, not to carry." That's the way sometimes God answers our prayers, you see, not in the way that we think. You know, there are many, many stories told about the way people go about doing things. So many people go in for austerities. So many people go in for techniques. And many of them go in for austerities in the way that, for instance, they're so careful about the food that they eat. I have seen Brahmins, for instance, who won't let anybody but a certain individual touch their food. And if anyone even looks at it, then the food is contaminated. And they say that that person has put evil into it. But the man or the woman with a pure heart can eat food after anybody. It doesn't matter who that person is. And you can carry these things to extremes so that your whole attention is upon the techniques, upon the austerities, and not upon God as it should be. These things have their place. But the fewer techniques you can be given and use, and the more you can consciously practice keeping your attention upon God, the greater will be your reward, the more rapid will be your progress, and you will find that you will have your realization a great deal sooner than you would have it otherwise. When these experiences come to you on the way up, you should say, "Thank you, Lord, for the experience." But these are merely the manifestations that come from you. What I want is the direct perception, the direct knowledge, the direct realization of my oneness with you. Father, reveal thyself, reveal thyself. And you will find that if you will do this with all of the love, the devotion, the sincerity of your heart, that God will respond, because He responds to love. He responds to self-effacement. He responds to humility, as He does to nothing else. He knows which ones are his own, and he will single them out. This applies to soulmates, it applies to anything else. Because if it is God's will that you have a certain individual to go through life with, he will arrange it. All of the things will be made ready, including you yourself, for the experience. And if it is to be a good experience, you will have that experience in all of the glory of God. But you can make that experience good regardless of what it is, because there is one way to do it above all others, and that is to change yourself. You may many times find that you cannot change another individual, but you can change your own attitude so that you can live under those conditions with that individual. And in changing yourself, you will have grown a million miles, whereas the other person may not grow at all. This has happened many, many times. And so it is God who arranges all of these things, regardless of what they are. The point is that your feet should be upon the spiritual path. In fact, whether you know it or not, it is there from the moment of your birth, because nothing or nobody can deflect that which is your destiny. But in the beginning, man in his animalistic state is not conscious of the fact that he must go to God, that he must find that union. He's not even aware of the fact that there is such a thing, because he is so steeped in his own ego consciousness. And life around us in the worldly sense has been such that his indoctrination has been totally that way. And so, in one sense, he is not to blame. And yet, if he comes with this special longing, this special awareness, this special reaching out in love and longing for God, then that one seems to stand apart. They have a special glow about them, a special light in the eye. They have charm of personality. They have a power which radiates from them as a magnet and draws all to themselves. You will find this is true. If you do not have the ability to make friends, then go to God, because he is the greatest friend of all. And he will arrange for you to have so many friends, you won't know what to do with them. And sometimes you will say, Father, give me just a few moments to be by myself. But you know, many, many times I have done this, because I've been so worn out with the various tasks which have been assigned me. And so I lift my eyes, and momentarily I say to him, this was many years ago I did this, I've learned better now, Father, if you'd just give me 5 minutes respite. But instead of that, he packed it on a little bit harder. So I learned to keep quiet while I was ahead. You see, gradually we learn to surrender our will to him. It doesn't come just in a moment. But now I am so totally surrendered to him that whatever he wants for me is also my will, because it is my will to do the will of God alone, not my own will, but thine be done, O Father. And I find that when I turn everything over to him, that no matter what the seeming appearance is at the moment, that everything turns out for my highest good, and that which seems so difficult for me to go through at the moment turns out to be the greatest blessing in disguise. And I spend all of my time thanking him for this great difficulty which he bestowed upon me, because it was such a great blessing in the end. Perhaps some of you have had this experience. If you have not, you should try it sometime. It really is wonderful. There is no joy, no happiness, no peace greater than that, that is found in the total surrender to and the service to God. If you give him all of your hearts, all of your consciousness, all of your effort, his reward will come to you in the gold of the Spirit. And you will feel such tremendous peace, such tremendous beauty, such tremendous joy within yourself, that it is literally indescribable. There are some who are with me in this group who are like that. Some of them just glow, they radiate. I was speaking with one woman the other day who told me that the first thing in the morning when she opens her eyes, she speaks to God. I don't remember just what her words were, but they were simply beautiful. Lord, guide me and direct me in accordance with thy will alone. Lead me on thy path. Make me do everything that you wish me to do. Whatever you want for me, Lord, here am I, take me. And it was a tremendous experience for her. And she said that the way that things were opening up for her were simply unbelievable. That each day was a thing of beauty. That all of a sudden she would feel a direction to go out and walk. And her husband would say to her, well, are you not afraid? You mustn't go out like that by yourself. And she said to him, having total faith in the protection of God, do you not think that God will protect me when my love for him is so great? And so he does. He protects her every moment. And she has new experiences because she is having them in God. It's wonderful. We should not put narrow boundaries around ourselves. We should not hold ourselves apart from other people who have a different faith than we have. Because there is only one Father God. And we are all his children. We are all brothers and sisters, all linked together with the same golden thread of spirit. One religion doesn't have one God, and another religion another God. There is only one. And each one is worshiping that one in the way in which he has been taught, in the way in which he has been directed. This doesn't make his worse or better than ours. It makes it different. It may make his state of consciousness a little different than ours. But wherever we are, someone else once was. And wherever that other person is down below, we also once were. So it's like the story of the man who was looking down, he was on the ladder of God realization, and he looked down, and as far as his eye could see, he saw all of these souls climbing this ladder toward heaven. And in his vanity and pride, he said, my God, how far I have come. All of a sudden, his eyes were lifted to the heavens, and he saw the ladder extending so far that he couldn't see the end of it with all the people above him. And he said to himself, my God, how far I have to go. But the truth is that we don't have to go any place, because God was, he is, and he always will be. He is eternal. He is here and now, this moment. As I've told some of you before, there is no time but now, no place but here. In truth, we have never left the heart of God, but we have been falsely indoctrinated to the point where we think that we are separated from God. That we have been told we are such miserable sinners, that we can never make it, that there is so far for us to go. This is totally wrong, because at this moment we are the children of God, each and every one of us. But we have to realize that within ourselves, and to do that, the way is the concentration and the meditation upon him alone, the service to him alone, the giving up of the little self, in order that you may find this real self, which is God within you. He is your self, your very self, not a stranger, not someone outside that you have to look toward. He is that universal spiritual life principle which dwells in the heart of every man, which is in every atom of space, which keeps this universe working perfectly. Just imagine all of the stellar systems, all of the planets, and it's so vast that there are many systems outside of this one which we even have no knowledge of. And yet, all of this is going on all of the time by the immutable and perfect working of the law and the will and the consciousness of God. How wonderful, how beautiful it is when you stop to think about it. And we are a part and parcel of that. It is we who have gotten out of step. God never gets out of step. It is we who have been taught that we are imperfect. And yet if we had been taught that right from the beginning, that we were God's perfect children, born in love, one with him now, how different our lives would have been. There would not be this constant insecurity, this constant reaching out, this constant feeling that I'm so bad I can never make it. Because naughty or good, we are his child. And we have in the Christian Bible the story of the prodigal son who went away from the father, who did all sorts of things. But when he came back, the father was so glad to see him that he put on a big banquet. He welcomed him with open arms. And he paid more attention to him than he did to the faithful. And they didn't know what to think about it. They didn't know. But he knew they were with him. But he was so glad that this one had come into the consciousness where he could return to the Father, to put his feet again on the path. Love is the great salve of the universe. It is the great healer. It is that which brought this world into being, which sustains it, and which is constantly changing it into new forms, so that God may more greatly express himself. There is no place where you can look anywhere where God is not. If there were, he would not be omnipresent. If there was any other power, he would not be omnipotent. If there was any other wisdom, he would not be omniscient. We cannot speak out of both sides of our mouth. Either God is all there is, or we can't believe what we have been taught. And yet, look how messed up we are. We are constantly fighting with this satanic force, which has been thrust down our throat since the beginning of time. And every time you think of it, every time you live in fear of it, you give it power and therefore substance. And it rises up and it works against you. Ignore it. But you must, in all of this, not go out and deliberately work out of harmony with God's laws. You cannot go out and disobey the Ten Commandments or any of the other commandments that are given to us down through the ages in all the great religions of the world and still expect to have this peace of mind and to attain your God realization. You have to work in harmony with God's laws. You have to become pure, because virginity is a thing to be attained. It is not something that you are born with, only in the physical sense, because there are many people who are virgins in the physical sense, whose minds are far from virginal, I can tell you. This state of virginity comes through the experiences of life, which bring you to that point where your desire for God, your desire to surrender to him, your love for him, your yearning for him, are so great that you are willing to go through whatever fire is necessary in order to attain that. Because gradually you come to know that if you are to attain the state of purification or virginity, you must be completely pure physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually before you can go over the top of the wall of duality into the ocean of God's infinite presence. That has to come. It is a gradual process. Man, having gone the way he has for centuries, doesn't accomplish it overnight. But don't get discouraged. Don't forget that as of this moment, you can do it if you will. And you do it through a simple process of rejecting the idea of separation and accepting with equal intensity the truth, which is I and my Father are one. Now. You will find that all impurities drop away from you. You will find that your desire to do the things that you formerly did drop away. You cannot cloud your mind with the things of the senses and expect to get God realization. Anybody that puts their feet on the spiritual path must give up alcohol, they must give up cigarettes, they must give up the use of drugs, of pot, of all of this sort of thing. Now, when you say drugs, there are many drugs. I'm not speaking of the drugs for medication when people are ill. I'm speaking of the drugs that people take to bring on certain moods within themselves, to try to get peace or to get a high. These experiences which come as a result of that are purely hallucinatory, and they are self-destructive. You may disagree with that, but as sure as anything they are, and I have seen too much evidence of it with my own eyes. I have seen young lives destroyed totally. I have seen scenes of people who had gone these paths. And I want to tell you, it was absolutely terrible to think that a human being, starting out gently as they do, went from one thing to another and wound up with total self-destruction. It's awful. And you cannot, at one and the same time, serve God and mammon too. Your mind must be clear. There is no greater high than the wine of the Spirit. And if you will but make the effort to overcome all of the things of temptation, and to go within yourself, and to concentrate, and to meditate upon God, and to serve him with all of your heart and mind and soul, you will find this eternal bliss, this eternal joy within yourself. And it isn't something that's going to be turned off. It isn't going to put you in a state of depression tomorrow. Because when you really get it, it lasts for all eternity. It comes and goes in the beginning. But the time comes, if you put forth sufficient effort, when you will get it and you will keep it and you will have it with you every moment. Now, you may have outer manifestations in the physical sense, and I've had them myself. But the bliss of God inside of me is never turned off. My knowledge of my union with Him is with me every moment of my life, to the point where there's only one operating, because I'm so totally surrendered to Him that whatever He wants is mine. This is His body, which He has created. It is His mind alone which functions in here. Whatever use He wants to make of His own creation, this is His to do. This is my will. No one has taken that will away from me. I'm not just a fop in the hands of God. I'm not like a marionette on a string. It is my will to do the will of my Father, because I have found through long experiences, through the many years of my life, that to do otherwise is to punish myself, to cause my own self-destruction. And I have had my nose wiped on the earth and the skin rubbed off of enough that I don't want any more of it. I'm ready to call uncle, and I did many, many years ago. And I found that what was called the hard way was the easiest way of all. Because what we say is so difficult to do, is so easy to do by comparison with the burdens that we voluntarily pack on our own backs, the burdens that we voluntarily choose through our own wrong desires and actions, that there is no comparison whatsoever. Because when you are totally surrendered to God, He packs the burden for you. Remember that Jesus said, "Come to me, all of ye who are heavy burdened and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." And this means to throw yourself and all of your burdens at the feet of God. And He will assume the responsibility for your life. He will act, He will think, He will speak through you and for you. He will lead you, He will guide you, He will direct you. Many times He pushes you to the precipice and sometimes even over. But you will find that His hand is down at the bottom to catch you. So that you may be a little banged up, but it was a banging up you needed to bring you into some higher state of consciousness. But you were saved. You were held safe. And you learned a great deal from the experience. You don't grow strong by avoiding things through fear. There are many who hear about various experiences in the spiritual path, and immediately they shrink with fear. Oh, I couldn't stand to have this or that or the other thing happened to me. And so they back away and they're afraid to meditate. They're afraid of the experiences which will come to them. But I'm still here. I have been through things that perhaps very few people on this earth have been through. And I say this in no sense of egotism. But this life has really been something for 70 years. And yet I sit before you. And I have strength and I have power and I have this mastery over this body, that no matter what condition it is in, it is the spirit which is important, and it is the spirit which is the master and makes it do what it is supposed to do. The power of God is limitless if you will only give it an opportunity. Absolutely limitless. You will find longevity. You will find peace. You will find happiness. You will find contentment, a contentment that you never knew before. A fulfillment that contains your farthest dream when you give up everything of yourself so that only God dwells in your temple, because He is your real self. And you will find then who you really are, what your destiny is. You will find the workings of the universe. You will find it right within your own consciousness, because you are the microcosmic part of the macrocosmic whole, the individual as related to the universal, and yet perfect in every detail, even as it is in the outer sense. And don't forget the great injunction of the Christ, to be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. That means not only in the spiritual sense, but it means in every facet of your existence. Everything that you think, say, and do, strive for that perfection. Because whatever you manifest in your life, whether it be in your dress, the way you keep yourself, the way you wear your hair, whether your clothes are clean, your body is kept clean, how you eat, what your house looks or your office looks around you, that expresses what you as an individual are inside. And if God is all wonder and beauty and glory, and He is the dweller in this temple, it is our responsibility to see that everything about ourselves is kept up perfectly, and that all of these things around us, for which we are the stewards or the stewardesses, is also kept in good condition. This is our responsibility for Him, because they are all His. We but have the use of them. It's a great thing to be without possessions. When you have possessions, you can be possessed. And that is not the way to be. I'm in the process of moving, and many, many things have been given to me. And I was thinking yesterday how nice it would be if I could give away all of these things and just keep a typewriter, have a nice room with a view for inspiration, and my meals brought to me, and not have the responsibility for all of these things. I really was thinking this, because I was so infinitely tired from trying to move all of the things that God has given me responsibility for. Really. Because the greatest gift that He can give you is the gift of the knowledge that He and you are one. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. And this is the truth that I tell you. How could it be otherwise? This is such an erroneous system that has been set up. This idea of our being constantly the miserable sinners, because whatever your powerful mind dwells upon, that you bring into manifestation. And how much greater and more beautiful a thing it is to think and to be taught and to teach all of the little ones on the way up that they are the children of the eternal God, one with Him, the very cells of His one body, than it is to be taught that always and eternally we are sinners and we're separated from Him, and that we must go through hell, fire, and damnation. How horrible. The whole kingdom of heaven and of earth is open to everyone who seeks it, if they but knew it. But the effort has to be generated. The idea has to be generated within yourself. Faith without works is dead. You not only have to learn the truth, you not only have to reach out for it, but you have to keep reaching out for it until you find it. Even if you die for it, you must continue to reach out for it. And what dies is not you, but it is that human ego within yourself which is the ghost of your real self. And when that dies, through crucifixion or transformation, whatever label you want to place upon it, then comes the totally enlightened state, and you are filled with the power of the Holy Ghost, or the divine ego, God in human form. So it is well to give up this ghost of the real self, or God within you, in order that you may be filled with the power of the Holy Ghost. I remember one time I was sitting with my guru, and I was having a wonderful conscious union with him. And he had told a story one Sunday in church, and I happened to be present, about having given the power of the Holy Ghost to someone. And so, in the infancy of my understanding, I thought it would be great if he would do that. So I asked him if he would give me this experience. For a long time, he didn't answer, and he kept on speaking of other things. So I sat and I stewed and wondered why I didn't get an answer, and was feeling very hurt and put upon and deprived, of course. And all of a sudden, just before I was ready to leave, he said, "Put your hands in mine, just like this." And he took hold of my hands like this. He said, "Now look in my eyes." And I looked in his eyes, and he had the most beautiful, the most powerful eyes, just filled with the light of God. And I looked into his eyes, and all of a sudden, his eyes weren't there at all. And all I could see was this tremendous light just streaming between us. It was like a white mist. And I felt such bliss, such power enter my being, that literally I was intoxicated with it. And when I got up, I staggered on my feet. I remember that he was about to put me through many tests after that. And as I went toward the door, he said, "Mildred?" I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Look at me." So I turned and looked at him in a very dazed fashion. And he said, "I just wanted to look at you once more." So then it started, and he really put me through the tests. Really put me through. But now I know why he did. Because the Master says many times,